This recording is from FinTech Nexus USA, formerly known as London FinTech USA, held at the Javits Center in New York City on May 25th to 26th, 2022. It's from the track Financial Health, FinTech Demonstrates Its Impact, sponsored by Plaid and is titled Prize-Linked Savings and Beyond, How Banking Innovation is Driving Financial Health. Speaking on the session are Arijit Roy from Truist with moderator Tim Flack from Commonwealth.
Hi, everybody. So I am Tim Flacca, and I have the privilege of leading Commonwealth, which is a national nonprofit building financial security and opportunity for low and moderate income, financially vulnerable households through innovation and partnerships. We're obviously going to be a small crowd, so please do feel free to come down, or just if you have questions, let's try to make this, you know, just the most useful for everyone. But I am super excited to be able to talk with Arijit Roy today. And I think we'll just get into it. The reason that we're here is because of work we did together on Start, Save, Win. And one of the things that I'm really excited about with this product is that we just don't see a lot of innovation in savings generally. And, you know, quite honestly, even less likely to see it from the very largest banks, which Truist is among, and even less likely to see innovation in savings from large banks focused on underserved consumers, focused on short-term liquid savings. So can you just tell us a little bit about Start, Save, Win, and why did you guys buck the trend and kind of put that innovation muscle behind this product?
Sure. Tim, thanks for having me on. Traditionally, when you think about innovation, most innovators start to think about addressable markets. They start to think about profit pools. And so when you then take that sort of as the underlying driver and apply it in the space of financial services, it is only natural that you see most innovation sort of happen at the upper end of the economic spectrum. And even with that, given the functioning of how people think about banks, most banks treat their savings pools as just a funding mechanism. And so when you see innovation happen, you see innovation happen through APY and promo rates. And so that is traditionally why there's been less innovation geared towards the LMI space. At Truist, what we saw was an opportunity. We saw white space, and part of it was driven by our purpose. We are an incredibly purpose-driven company. Every PowerPoint, every teammate can kind of recite what our mission is. Our favorite value is when clients win, we all win. But really, with that as a starting point, we found an unlock. And the unlock here was when you looked at a large pool of clients that weren't clients of ours yet, and we could offer a solution that these clients weren't necessarily taking advantage of yet, we found that the ability to think about economic value could be unlocked if you actually thought about the lifetime relationship that you were building with this cohort. And so rather than think in the lens of averages and think in the lens of, you know, you've got a certain amount of opportunity, if we thought about this segment differently, we thought it could actually drive a tremendous amount of value. And so that's a little bit of why we dove into the space. We were not the first to think about prize-linked savings. There are credit unions that have done this well, but we were really fortunate to be the first top 10 bank to be in the space, and that's what drove us to do this.
That's great. And it really resonates to me, this idea of the white space, that there was a gap. I mean, we see this in our work in terms of certainly exciting or even just accessible savings products. I realize it probably would make sense just to give a really brief description of Start, Save, Win, just so we, you know, make sure we're clear about what the product is. Can I put you on the spot to do that?
Absolutely. So it is essentially traditionally banks will go out and try to acquire savings customers on the back of a $300 promo that you see in a flyer that shows up in your mailbox. Or you've got neobanks and branchless banks that will offer a teaser, you know, high yield on a savings account. What Start, Save, Win does is it actually creates an incentive mechanism that matches the behavior you're hoping to see from the client. And in this instance, it's a customer segment or a client segment that does not have enough saved for a $400 emergency. And so it's net neutral to the bank from a CPA lens. It's the same cost of acquisition. The lifetime value of the client's a lot longer, so the weighted average length of the relationship is a lot longer. But for the client, it's a huge win, or the customer, it's a huge win, because she actually has an opportunity to take part in the sweepstakes model where she can actually take advantage of trying to win a lottery. And so through this, we actually saw some tremendous impact. We saw about 25,000 households open accounts with us under this program, roughly about 41 million in balances saved. We saw about a quarter of the people that actually participating reached the goal of meeting that $400 threshold that we'd set. And roughly about a third of the clients that we saw open accounts were still on book. I mean, this is a very transient population that open and close accounts 90 days into the program. And so that's what we were so excited about.
That's fantastic. And I mean, you know, we have a long history at Commonwealth thinking about prizes for savings. And what I love about it is that for most of us, well, I shouldn't say most, many of us, saving is just the very essence of self-denial. You know, it's the opposite of something positive. And this mechanism turns out to really, really change that equation for folks. So what I wanted to ask you about, you already hinted at a little bit, but as we've gotten to know Truist, I have really been struck that, you know, Start, Save, Win is not sort of a one-off or an anomaly. It really does feel like an expression of not just your values, but also your strategy. And, you know, for Commonwealth, trying to pursue sustainable change is really important to us, right? So it's great when folks do something exclusively from values, but it's even more interesting when it's strategy too. So I just wonder if there's anything more you can tell us about how Truist sort of thinks about the strategy and the values coming together in this segment and with savings.
Yeah, it's a great question, Tim. And I agree with that 100%. And it's for us, as we think about the world, and the world's been sliced this way by a variety of folks, right? They think about saving solutions, spending solutions, lending solutions. We've been very deliberate in thinking about this segment is actually a real business segment. This isn't charity. This isn't us writing a check. This isn't just a footnote in a CSR report. For us, we actually see this as a continuum, and we actually see the white space, there's that word again, because we've seen institutions not lean into it. And so the absence of sizable institutions playing at scale, offering these solutions, leads to a fragmented space where you have payday lenders and check cashers and refund anticipation providers. And so that is the opportunity. And so very, very selfishly for us, this is also a cohort that we traditionally had not served at scale. And so that's how we were deliberate in thinking about this cohort very, very deeply as a core part of who we wanted to serve. And this is sort of, again, to your point, it's not a one and done thing. We started in the savings space because we saw a real need. We were opportunistic in partnering with you. Being a part of the BlackRock Emergency Savings Initiative was a huge, huge deal for us. We extended that thinking into checking solutions. And so when we went into how we launched a new checking product, we studied our clients' behavior. We studied what was exactly happening at the moment of overdraft. And so in the announcements we made and the new checking solution that we're coming up with is another example of us just being very deliberate and thoughtful in serving this cohort. I'll make two other points. The goals and the aspirations you described for this cohort are not that different from the goals and aspirations that you see on the Upper West Side or in some really fantastic parts of town. It's just that the numbers are different. It's just that the individual circumstances with the families are different. But the conversations, the inherent needs that you're trying to meet actually scale up and down the economic spectrum. And so if you get this right in this space, there's a lot you can do in trying to serve other segments. The last thing I'll say is this was also so deliberate in our thinking, and we learned so much from it. We thought it was so powerful that we started conversations with Long Game, the fintech. We actually have people from the Long Game team here. We were deliberate in how we thought it was a strategic acquisition for us. Long Game, for those of you that aren't familiar, is a fintech that gamifies savings behavior. Not quite the incentive that's similar to a prize link or a sweepstakes notion, but it again rewards people for actually going online and actually behaving in the way that drives savings up. And so if you think about this whole problem of trying to solve savings, this notion of solving for emergency savings is the foundation. It's the cornerstone that then allows clients to then start saving for something bigger and then start thinking about bigger and bigger purchases. And that's how you solve the problem.
I think that's great. And one thing that we see that you may see as well is that if you have never been able to really build any savings, the psychological reward from suddenly crossing that threshold and having a little bit in the bank is outsized. And what a great basis for that lifetime relationship that you're describing. So switching gears a little bit, one of the things we chatted about when we were getting ready for this session is, you know, it's a fast moving world, and banks, you know, have strategic advantages. They may have some handicaps relative to fintechs, but also just innovation writ large. And I imagine in your role, you've given that some thought. And I wonder if we could get you to talk about what are the real strategic assets that especially the big banks, but banks have, you know, against social impact and financial inclusion, but also just in terms of business opportunities.
It's again, great question and very contextual given where we are. We're watching the space with existential interest, so much has been done in the fintech space where the speed of what's happening with respect to change and social elements of it is actually the speed is accelerating, and you've sort of seen that happen in the last couple of years. This is a gross generalization, but generally, fintechs will start out trying to solve a very, very specific problem, and they go at it fast. They solve it really well. They solve it intuitively for clients, and then they expand their aperture a little bit, and then they start offering services that are analogs to it. It's a generalization, but that's something that we see. The concern sometimes you hear is, well, fintechs are going to lead to the demise of banks, and at the end of the day, they're going to eat our lunches. And we're frankly not seeing that. And it's there are two perils that come to mind. What's happening in the financial services industry is not similar to what happened in the telecom shift. People cutting their cords and going from landlines to cell phones. We're not seeing that. It is also not similar to what's playing out, albeit maybe 3 years into it. Is people aren't ditching banks like they ditched their cable companies and started to use streaming services. And the reason for that is, I think that on Main Street, the state-owned bank with its branch and its human teller and a human person on the other end of a call center line, even if you have to wait 2 hours, is actually a key driver in maintaining trust on Main Street versus bots. And so I think that there is a possibility, there is an opportunity for fintechs to partner with banks to scale up. Because in the hot minute that we've seen fintech sort of proliferate, it's been hard for them to gain the same level of trust that you expect from a branch. And you see this in various aspects of the life cycle of clients. And for banks, there's a lot to be learned from fintechs as well. I mean, I think the ways that we have even in our very brief relationship with Long Game, thought about how to organize work, how to speed up decision-making, how to be more intuitive and stop using disclosures as a way to turn clients away. I mean, you know, like so much of our language is written by lawyers. No offense to lawyers in the room. There's an opportunity for banks and fintechs to coexist. And I think that if we found ways to work towards that common cause, it actually could be lead to greater good for entire sectors.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense to me. I'm just realizing somebody has sent us a question, and I think we can answer it quickly. What is the prize? I think this probably means for Start, Save, Win.
Yes, it is actually so we broke it out, and it is a opportunity to be a part of a lottery where you win small prizes. We tiered it. It was anywhere from as small as $25 to as high as $125. And the way you would get the entry is, we'd want to see you behave. And so if you went in and built up your ending balances on your savings account, you actually had more at-bats to go have an opportunity to win that prize.
I sometimes think about that as almost minting your own form of incentive currency that you can reward people with. Yeah. And, you know, people know $125 is not going to change the course of their life, but I don't know. I even remember as a kid, you know, when my ticket was pulled out of the school lottery, you know, it's like, I won, you know, the value of the prize is not the only piece of that.
And keep in mind the problem we're trying to solve. This is a $400 threshold. And we were looking for people that, number one, didn't have bank accounts. And number two, when they had bank accounts, were either running negative balances or close to zero balances. And so for that population, getting them to that $400 threshold was huge. And we saw about 40% of the people that actually participated in the program achieve that objective, which we thought was pretty remarkable.
That's fantastic. So let's shift gears again. One of the things that I have been really struck by was the way Truist responded to something that happened through the pandemic, which was a truly, you know, unprecedented federal policy change, which was a dramatic expansion of the child tax credit. Is this familiar to folks? Or just very briefly, right, the child tax credit, which is available to parents, was dramatically expanded by Congress, made refundable, so if you didn't have tax liability, you could still qualify for it. And then it was delivered in monthly payments through the second half of last year. And I have this pet theory that we may very well see future big policy changes that don't fall cleanly into the sort of thing that banks or financial services would sort of consider their turf, that are actually going to have implications for financial services. I think student debt forgiveness would be an example of that. Probably not the kind of thing that most banks see as squarely, you know, their kind of folks in Washington might not. We could see stuff on benefits policy. So to see Truist kind of seize this this potential opportunity with the radical expansion of the child tax credit, which unfortunately, in my opinion, is now expired. But I just wanted to know kind of how did that happen? What was your experience? Was it a good thing, you know, for the corporation, for yourself? Yeah.
100%. And for those of you that don't know, this actually started with a call with you and your team. And it was Brian and Nick asking the question, hey, what are you guys as Truist doing about this? And led to a thought bubble. It led to some curiosity-related questions. And I think the light bulb moment for us was when we realized the sheer volume of the money in motion from the federal government to families. We realized we couldn't be on the sidelines and not do anything about it. And so as a result of it, what we did is we really leaned into what we'd learned through other instances. We quickly diagnosed the problem and found that there was an access problem, meaning people that were eligible for the child tax credits didn't have accounts that could receive the credit. And there was an awareness problem. So people that actually had the accounts didn't know that, hey, I actually am going to be getting some government stimulus, and maybe there's a break in the system somehow. So we mobilized our you know, 22,000 client-facing teammates. We actually created marketing around this. We actually wrote a blog and did a podcast, and we tried to get the awareness component of it really going because there were bank on certified accounts that we could bring to bear to solve the access component of it. And what we saw was astounding in a big way, Tim. We helped 53,000 families save about $1.2 billion. Now, we don't have a test and control on this. There was no control where we didn't do it. And so for us, that is real balances that were coming into our account. It actually helped lead to about 20 to 30,000 new clients open relationships because of the fact that we were steering into this. Others of our peers were silent about it. Frankly, the only folks that were talking about it were fintechs. And even simpler things, the marketing material we used, we monitor our performance on sales, on specific marketing campaigns, down to mail drops and email drops. And the cell that talked about these topics actually outperformed everything else we had going to the tune of about 3x. And so the lesson learned here is if you're able to be relevant to clients in helping solve a problem that no one else is helping solve for you, it actually leads to long-lasting relationships. And that's where you hope and you actually put these strategies in place where you're building relationships that last through ups and downs and all kinds of twists and turns in life.
It makes so much sense, that relevance. I think we all want to be seen, right? We don't necessarily expect our bank to know what we're going through. We're at almost at time, but I'm not going to let you off without this question. We think a lot about, and we all read a lot about systemic change, systemic actions. But at the, you know, in that, there's individuals who are making choices, right? And one thing you shared once with me, maybe you'll regret that, but is that what you are doing today is actually more or less what you wrote in your application to business school 15 plus years ago. So what drives you to do this work? How does it make sense for you as an individual?
I was hoping we were going to run the clock out so we wouldn't talk about this, but here we are. You've known me since 2004, and I just love what I do. I love what I do. And to me, I'd always had the aspiration of wanting to have impact in people's financial lives. Back when you knew me, I used to work at a tax company. And my business school essays were about working at companies that may or may not exist now and may have had twists and turns through TARP and other things. But and at the time, I didn't know there was going to be a company called Truist. But at the end of the day, it is an incredibly lucky thing that you get to do what you said you were going to do. I mean, it's very rare that fate sort of plays that card for you. I'll say that if you're able to steer your company and you find a few people that believe that ride, it makes all the difference in the world. I mean, I'm exhausted most days, but when I wake up and I'm either headed to the airport or I'm headed on a WebEx or I'm headed into the office, I can't wait for what's coming. And so just the fact that you've got companies that actually care and make an impact in people's lives and just having the good fortune of being a part of that story is just incredible. I'm just the luckiest guy in the world.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think there are people in this audience and this conference who have the ability to make an incredible difference. So thank you. What a great conversation. Thanks. All right.